Hey, Robert, why should people listen to another retro gaming podcast?
You mean our cast, David? We do have to keep this short, you know.
Yes, well, I guess we should start with the fact we celebrate old school video games.
And we have awesome guests and game giveaways. Don't forget that.
Plus our game show and your favorite segment, Random Select.
Don't remind me. Are we done yet?
Listen to our cast, another retro gaming podcast, part of RetroZap.com.
Finally, back to my beer.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Point, No Mix, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. Man, you know, I know I'm repeating myself from episode 200, which I hope you all enjoyed, but what a few weeks we've had on Boston Bastard Brigade. The Aspie Chan interview, Frank Turner being on one-on-one, being quoted on manga, and to top it all off, I got to interview the band that started it all for me, The Pillows, and Noodles too, who were also instrumental to my love for Japanese rock. This has led me to think of where I go from here. You know, a lot of strides were made in these last few weeks, to the point where I have no idea what I can accomplish next for No Borders, No Race. I'm actually really serious. I'm kind of stumped on what to set my sights on next, but hopefully a new, smaller goal will find itself budding from the deepest parts of my mind. Because, you see, a couple weeks ago, I was having a conversation with Pandalicious from Electric Sisterhood, and I had mentioned that my biggest goal would be to do No Borders, No Race from Japan, be it in this podcast form like you're hearing right now, or even on the radio over there. An English-language J-pop and alternative music show that would serve a couple of purposes. On one side, it'd be to promote Japanese artists that are visiting from other parts of the world, but on the other side, it'd be for those in Japan who are currently learning English and are wanting help with the conversational part of the language. Listeners could call up, and we would chat about what's on their mind, or even just shoot the shit. Because I can imagine that it's hard to learn a foreign language when you don't have a native speaker friend who can help you along the way. Hell, it's why my Japanese has gone to shit. But I would also introduce Japanese listeners to bands that they might not know about. Your Titus Andronicuses, your Fucked Ups, your New Pornographers, and so forth. So it'd be a show for foreigners to hear some great J-pop, and for Japanese citizens to hear American, English, Canadian, and other bands from other parts of the world that they might not have any knowledge of. It would be a dream to be able to do a show like that from Japan, so maybe that can be my main goal for this program. But I'm just rambling about my life's objectives and what I hope to achieve, though I'm sure you listeners do that as well. So before I really go in deep with what I'd like to accomplish, which I could honestly talk your ear off about, let's head on to this week's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records from cdjapan.co.jp, Yes Asia, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We are going to start off with the sounds of Kodoko, who just released her 7th album, Tear Cyclone Kai. Always good to hear new stuff from her. Been a fan of her since her first contribution to probably one of my all-time favorite anime series, Hayate, the Combat Butler. Here's a fresh track from her entitled Onyx. We'll be right back. Galileo Galilei with Toy to Toile from their 2016 and sadly final album Sea and the Darkness. Well, it would be a sad ordeal had it not been for the fact that all the band members are back together. They got a new group called Bird Bear Hair and Fish, and their first new song under that moniker currently serves as the ending theme to Boruto, Naruto Next Generations, and holy shit, it is fire! Joining me now on No Borders Erased is the supervisor of marketing and product development for Asian Crush, a great streaming site and app that showcases various classic, cult, and current Asian television and cinema. They've also recently tossed their hat into the anime simulcast realm with their acquisition of the Studio Dean anime series Music Girls. Please welcome Miss Katie Cannon. How are you doing today, Katie?
I'm great, Evan. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So, for our listeners who have never heard of Asian Crush, describe to them your platform.
Of course. So basically, we are a video platform that's celebrating Asian culture, and it's curated for a native English-speaking audience. We're wanting to offer a great service for people who already love Asian content, like movies and dramas and anime, and for them to find new, compelling content here. But we're also looking to expand and introduce all the awesome stuff that's coming out of Asia to a new audience that might not already be familiar with it.
Excellent. So how does Asian Crush stand out from the rest of the streaming pack? Like, what can Asian Crush deliver that Hulu, Crunchyroll, or even Netflix can't?
I think our biggest strength right now is the selection and variety of Asian movies on the service. we offer more Asian movies than any other streaming services out there. Because like on bigger platforms like Netflix, they'll have like a few Korean or Chinese blockbusters. But like the depth and breadth of what we have is just like a lot more diverse. And also like we're not limited to just like one thing. Like, you know, you'll have Crunchyroll, which is like pretty to go to for any anime you could possibly watch. There's Drama Fever, or that's more focused on Korean dramas. But we kind of have something of everything, because there's so much great content across all the genres coming from out of Asia. So in addition to like the top grossing Asian movies, we also have like a lot of in our library of like past hits or other quality movies that maybe aren't making headlines over here in the US but are still like really worthwhile productions on their own. Like, just because it's not Train to Busan, like you may not have heard of it, but it's still awesome. And especially if you already are interested in Asian culture, you might find stuff that you haven't already heard of but would still love.
I'm glad we're talking a little bit about the cinema stuff, because the thing that first drew me to Asian Crush is your collection of films featured at the New York Asian Film Festival. Movies like The Laundryman, Hazy Lazy Crazy, Lazy Hazy Crazy, sorry about that, and Nameless Gangsta. Now, when it comes to Asian cinema, what do you see in these and the other films you have in your roster that you don't see in movies from the Western part of the world?
I think Asian movies just have a different kind of energy. I guess maybe because the movie industry is relatively new compared to Hollywood, you see a lot more experimentation, even in like the big Chinese and Korean blockbuster. So what I love about the movies is it's like a really, the best way to learn about the cultures of that country. With the genre films, the indie films, you can learn about that country's humor, social issues, urban legends, traditional values. Like, just watching a movie, like the first time I ever saw, like, you know, a Korean romantic comedy, it was just like, the entire sensibility was like totally different from like all the rom-coms I grew up with in the US. And it's just like a very, I don't know. It's like culturally enlightening, but also just a lot more interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I know over here in America, there's this kind of, like, stigma of, like, oh, when it comes to Asian cinema, people only seem to really pay attention to, like, the kung fu films. And I feel like the reason why that is that over here in America, we tend to really suck at making kung fu movies compared to what's over there in Asia. But then when you find out that over in Asia, they also have some fantastic, like, dramas, comedies, and even like slice of life films, like you get introduced to this new world and perspective that you never could imagine in any other Western movie.
Yeah, totally. It's not, people think of these specific genres when they think of Asian cinema, like anime or kung fu movies or something like that you don't really exist in like a legitimate way in America. But it's not just those specific genres. It's like they're doing completely new different things with even like the staples that you think Hollywood has covered.
Your roster is going to be expanding a lot. In fact, it's going to be expanding by one new film a week with your new partnership with China Lion and Orchid Tree, starting with Anne Hui's Our Time Will Come on July 20th. Now, how did this partnership come to be?
We have been working with China Lion and Orchid Tree for a little while now, in the past year or so, and everything we've come out of with them is just been really amazing content that's done really well and been really well received. Like stuff with big stars like Chris Wu out of China and Yang Mi. They're like really big names that everyone on our platforms has just really responded well to. And so we recently got a new big batch from them that we just wanted to really promote, because I think the effect that China is having on Hollywood right now and vice versa, they're like the biggest market out there. And I think, you know, we've just got to kind of get in line with that and really start bringing Chinese cinema to American audiences, because that's like the way things are going now, you know?
No, I totally agree with you. In fact, it's interesting that you point that out, because over in Boston, like one of our big movie theaters, one of our AMCs actually shows regularly like brand new films from China. Like no other theater around there does it. And I think it's really cool that they're trying to expand that to, you know, the American audiences. So I feel like people are really starting to realize what sort of market China is going to be able to bring to the American audience, while at the same time deliver something that could actually even inspire something brand new out of Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've been, many of the films that we are publishing on our streaming service now actually did have like their own limited theatrical runs here in New York and other cities. Yeah, I guess Boston too. So we're really excited about everything that's coming. So we're going to be doing, yes, one Chinese movie a week, basically into the fall, into like Halloween. And we'll probably be getting more movies as we go along, but that's what's scheduled for now. And we're really excited about it.
Fantastic. Now, are there any films from these upcoming releases that you personally are looking forward to? Because I saw the last film that you guys are doing, My Alien Girlfriend, and I've heard amazing things about this film.
Oh yeah, that one is supposed to be a lot of fun. It's kind of a wacky like genre mashup that I think it'll be appealing to more than to like a different kind of like different audience necessarily, because a lot of we have a lot of Chinese like rom-coms and stuff that have one audience, but I see My Alien Girlfriend as being something that could appeal to that audience, but also be kind of like for people with a little more like quirkier taste, a little more into like the cult, that kind of stuff. I'm personally really excited about our movie Youth that we'll be getting. It was one of China's top grossing films of the last year. It's like a coming of age story that is just like really poignant, and none of the actors in it are particularly well known, and they were all kind of less known actors, but it was just really a cultural phenomenon in China, so we're really excited about that one.
Fantastic, and I'm personally looking forward to seeing those movies being released as the weeks are progressing. So let's talk anime, because anime, of course, plays a big role in the Asian pop culture medium, and you have quite a few classic films in your roster, such as Robot Carnival, Jinro, and the film versions of Blackjack, Captain Harlock, and Urusei Yatsuru. Now, I know we may have answered this a little bit in the Asian cinema question, but what do you think it is about these properties that help stand the test of time?
They're from like the golden age of anime. That, you know, 80s nostalgia has been trending for a while now, and you can see a lot of the influence of this anime in the pop culture of the 80s, and it's totally back again with like the Blade Runner sequel and shows like Stranger Things. So nostalgia plays a big part in it, but I think a lot of these animes were really kind of prophetic in like their sci-fi elements, and we're kind of living now in the future that they imagined. So they're classic for a reason, you know, that's why they were so popular in their day, and people still care about them now. But I do think that the kind of the pop culture phenomenon we have going now, like it's, everything's a throwback, is definitely helping. I mean, there are certain things that like kind of seem strange and dated when you watch them now. But I think it's also part of it's interesting culturally to like think about it in those contexts.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of when I just recently did the review of the original manga version of Go Nagai's Devilman, and that manga is very, very dated compared to the recent reincarnation of it that just put on Netflix. I totally understand why they had to change so much of that for modern times.
I mean, what you're saying, Yatsura, when we were actually like putting it up on the platform, we had this big discussion because there's this entire like Nazi kid subplot going on in the anime, and like, you know, you never hear about it that much, like when you're you know, reminiscing about it, and then you're like, oh yeah, that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
how do we like grapple with that, like watching that now, especially in the current cultural climate, like in the context of Japanese context versus American context, it's really interesting and sometimes kind of difficult to deal with, but I think still like worth that. It definitely makes coming back to these titles worthwhile.
Yeah, if you want to be shocked, wait for the original Japanese subtitle version of Angel Cop to be released very soon, because that's got some controversy coming along its way.
Oh god.
Now, you are simulcasting the new summer anime series, Music Girls, the latest from Studio Deen, the same folks who gave us Ranma One Half, You're Under Arrest, and my personal all-time favorite anime comedy, Konosuba, God's blessing on this wonderful world. Now, what was it about Music Girls that made Asian Crush want it to be part of their roster?
So we licensed the series from King Records, who we worked with previously with Pop Team Epic back this winter, which was really huge for us. We were really excited about because Pop Team Epic, I mean, for I don't know if you watched it, but it's a loving satire of like everything that goes on in the anime world. And I would say Music Girls is almost like the polar opposite and almost like kind of embracing every like the anime tropes and like really unironically and sincerely. So we were really drawn to Music Girls when they suggested it to us but even though it appears to be like your normal idol anime, there's certain plot twists that kind of make the show stand out from others. And we haven't worked with this type of anime previously because most of our other anime content is that, you know, the kind of vintage classic anime apart from Pop Team Epic. So we were excited about getting something just brand new right off the bat.
And I was actually about to ask about what makes it stand out from like the Love Lives, the Idol Masters, and the Wake Up Girls anime series that have been coming out in the past. But I actually did watch the episodes that have been released thus far. And what I like about Music Girls is that unlike the ones that have the idols front and center, this one seems to be more about the behind-the-scenes aspect of working with idols, where the main girl it winds up being like the gopher for this group.
Yeah, that's one thing that we really liked. It wasn't the stereotype of like, oh, they're all shining stars and they've got so much talent. Like the main girl that's supposed to, I mean, eventually supposed to be like leading them to fame.
Yeah, Hanako.
She can't sing, like, and she's there to help them, but it's not like some kind of, you know, Mary Sue, like, so talented at everything kind of character. And she doesn't even know what idols are before she begins. Like, she thinks idols are some kind of monster stuffed animal.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a different storyline because, yeah, it's more behind the scenes, more like what actually, like the things that go on to make idols star other than just like the glamour of singing and dancing. But also, the group in the show are actual artists releasing real singles through the King Records' new record label, Pine Records. And King Records is a record label in itself.
Oh, yeah. I actually just interviewed the band The Pillows, who are part of King Records, so I'm very, very familiar with those guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, great. And another thing they did that was really cool, they used motion capture techniques for animating all of the dance sequences. So it's the whole thing is really kind of, even though it's like a tried and true genre, there's a lot of, it feels very current. Especially like, you know, watching something like Idolmaster from back in like the early aughts, it has like, you know, kind of a, this feels just very new. It's fresh, you know, it kind of reflects what's here now.
Exactly. Now, I know that Music Girls is currently your only one you're doing simulcasting. Are there plans to expand on doing more anime simulcast in the near future?
Oh, yeah, we would love to do that. Like, that's definitely something we're in the market to do. We have not any concrete plans for it at this moment, but whatever opportunity comes our way, we'll definitely consider it because it's been a really great experience so far.
Now, what would you say is the ultimate goal for Asian Crush, both for the streaming site itself and for its viewers?
Well, it's basically become like kind of a Netflix dedicated to Asian entertainment. Netflix is doing an amazing job diversifying content globally, but I think Asia has a lot more to offer than what's currently on Netflix. So we basically just want to be like the go-to place for any kind of Asian content you could want to watch.
Now, I know Netflix has its originals, Hulu's got its originals, even Drama Fever and Crunchyroll are throwing the hat into originals. Is original programming something that Asian Crush is eyeing to accomplish in the near future?
It's definitely something we look forward to starting as the channel grows. It'll probably start with bringing independent content creators from Asia to a new audience in North America, whether it's been YouTube or Weibo, the Chinese social platform, or many of the other different Korean video platforms. But definitely original programming is something we are looking to get into one day.
All right, so my final question for you is, if there are three shows or movies that you can recommend as a great starting point for newcomers of Asian Crush, what would they be and why?
Okay, yeah, it's hard because there's a lot on there, but Hong Gong-ju is a really amazing film with great filmmaking, great acting by the lead actress Chun Woo-bi. It's a difficult film, but it's really worthwhile. Because part of our mission is to present a genuine picture of Asian cultures, unfiltered by like the exoticizing Hollywood or mainstream media vision attached to it. So it's a drama, like an emotional drama about a teenage girl that I don't want to give away too much, but it can be really gut-wrenching, but it's just extremely well done. It's not something that has gotten a lot of press or attention over here.
Good, interesting choice there.
Well, something in our library that I think a lot of people don't absolutely take notice at first, but it's really amazing. My Sassy Girl is kind of the quintessential Korean rom-com. It's a great starting point if you're finding yourself wanting to get into Korean comedies. It's kind of got that very iconic sensibility and some of Korea's like mainstays in the cinema, Cha Tae-hyun and Jung Ji-hyun, who continue to like basically star in like every other big Korean movie or television drama. It's hilarious. It's kind of it did get a Hollywood remake that was fucking terrible. I think it was Freddie Prinze Jr. And
you've already made me cringe there.
Yeah, I need to go into more detail. But the original is pretty beloved. In Korea, it's considered like kind of like the rom-com. It's from like 2004, I think, 2003. And then Jinro, which is you mentioned earlier. The original anime was written by the director of Ghost in the Shell. And it's just like pretty iconic, classic anime. And there's actually a live-action version in Korea coming out this year, but you should probably go ahead and check out the anime first, just based on how most anime live-action adaptations end up going.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a different... It's dark, it's edgy, it's, but a very novel kind of, like, quintessential kind of work from one of anime's best directors.
Katie, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders or Race. For more information and for people who want to check out Asian Crush, where can they find it?
Oh, you can find us at asiancrush.com or download our app for like iOS or Android. We are also on Roku and other smart TVs. Smart TVs are not Roku, but other smart TV apps we have. Finally, you should follow us on Facebook at AsianCrush.tv is the URL. We promote a lot of our movies on our website, but we also are kind of a pop culture page that if you're interested in Asian culture at all, you'll probably love.
Excellent. Question, are there plans to bring Asian Crush to consoles? Will there be an app for like Xbox One or PS4 in the near future?
Yes, that is definitely what we want. We definitely want to get it on consoles. That's still in the works, though.
All right, fingers crossed it happens very, very soon. Katie, thank you so much for joining me here. And a very special thank you to Michael Krauss from Foundry Communications for setting up this interview.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he was... I'm giving him a shout-out, even though he probably isn't expecting it.
Hopefully he'll appreciate it.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for reaching out. This has been great.
Yes, it's been fantastic. Up next, we have the New Jersey-based Dentist, who just released their third album, Night Swimming. They are in the midst of a big U.S. tour in support of it, which, unfortunately for me, lacks a Boston area date. Maybe next time, though. From Night Swimming, here are Dentist with All Is Well in Hell. Thank you. from the new Sentimentality EP that was Toe with 121. Don't know if that's supposed to be 121st or perhaps the date January 21st. Math Rock, you can be so confusing sometimes. But Toe will be releasing a new EP entitled Our Latest Number on August 21st and will be touring in America in support of it in September. I will be at the Brighton Music Hall show on September 10th, which is going to be such a great gig. Hikaru Utada has returned with a new album entitled Hatsukoi, which became her 10th number one album in Japan and even reached number 4 on the US iTunes chart. Not too shabby, Miss Utada. Here's a cut from the new album entitled Forevermore.
Yeah. short-circuit timeline. There's this low hum. All the things we left behind.
Restorations with Misprint from their 2014 album, LP3, an excellent band that served as Frank Turner's opener. Their next album, LP5000, is due to be released this September, and frontman John Loudon has informed me that they'll be hitting the road again soon after its release, so be sure to check them out if they wind up coming around your neck of the woods. Now folks, sometimes I say things on here that you may disagree with. On some occasions, it's just a ruse made just to throw a couple jokes at the expense of you lovely audience members. But other times, these are things that are so deep into the core of my personal belief system that I just need to just spill it out for all of you to hear. And here in this very segment is one of those pieces where I talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. That feeling just so happens to be my pure, unadulterated hatred for all things ABBA. Now I can sense that there's a rift that I just caused by uttering my distaste for this 70s Swedish pop group. You may now look at me like some sort of monster who has no right to question the gospel of the Dancing Queen of Waterloo, but I look unto your faces of disbelief and I say, fuck your taste, with a demonic sneer and a sharp fang grimace. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but your beloved band sucks. It doesn't matter if it's catchy or presents some sort of harmony in the vocals. No, it's how your beloved J-pop and alternative podcast host feels about them that matters most of all. And that feeling is one filled with grotesque anger and self-righteous fury. So you're wondering why I've taken this time of all places to talk about why ABBA is shit. Well, as I was watching the Jim Jefferies show on Comedy Central, a commercial for a new movie popped up. A film that no one asked for. A Mamma Mia sequel. Now I have a memory from when I was living in my college dorm, where I was hanging out with one of my friends and her girlfriend just so happened to be watching Mamma Mia in the other room. I saw nothing, but I heard the audible atrocities that were coming out of those television speakers. The terrible singing from Meryl Streep and Pierce Brosnan, the shitty soap opera quality dialogue and storytelling, and just the overall happy-go-lucky tone of a film about a girl who's trying to find out which of these three dudes slipped with her whore mom to bring her into this world of ours. And someone in Hollywood who probably has the IQ of a cucumber rotting under a Tuscan sun thought to themselves, hey, let's make another one of those. There are far better Broadway musicals that are desperately trying to be made into films right now, and no one was waiting for another Mamma Mia movie. Where the fuck is my Avenue Q film, for Christ's sake? Or how about that Spring Awakening film that's been in development hell? Or Urinetown! Urinetown would make a hilarious animated musical. So many better stage productions deserve to be given the Hollywood treatment. And yet this steaming pile of Swedish score garbage has the audacity to clone itself. And that's what this film is going to be, a shittier clone of its shitty predecessor. So I urge all of you listeners out there to not go see this film and instead view something like Sorry to Bother You or that new Ant-Man movie. Any film without ABBA sound splattered throughout is a far better choice than sitting through this heap of trash. Or even better, support your local theater community. Look into your paper or go online to see if a play or musical is being put on. Go buy tickets to it and enjoy a night with live performances. You know, just as so long as it's not Mamma Mia that they're putting on. So what's the point of this angry rant of mine? Well, there's no point, really. I just fucking hate ABBA, and I hate how the music industry and their fans treat them as the gods of pop music. They're not. Not even close. In fact, ABBA is why it's taken so long for Sweden to be allowed to bring out any more musical acts to our country, with bands like Sabaton, Ghost, and The Hives helping to iron out the mistake that they made in the 70s. No longer are they shunned for the musical abomination they brought onto the world, although we're still keeping a close eye on them to never allow that sort of sound back into our eardrums ever again. So please, stop supporting anything ABBA-related and give your cash to a band way more talented than them. Okay, I need something beautiful to calm myself down with, and I know just the thing. Here's a track from the late great Nujabes, who I felt rewrote the book on crafting the greatest hip-hop sounds. From his album, Model Soul, this is Flower. Flowers.
Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from IssuesProgram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out IssuesProgram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out IssuesProgram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Oh,
Always the busy singer and seiyuu, that was Sora Amamiya with Abyss from her brand new album, The Only Blue. Man, with her work in Tricell, the solo stuff, and her voice acting resume continuously getting longer, it's no wonder why she almost lost her voice a month back. But I'm glad she's doing much, much better. I can't dream of anyone who could replace her characters in Konosuba or The Seven Deadly Sins. Coming up, we've got the burning vocals of Linda M to set you ablaze with a track from her upcoming EP, London Irish, in stores September 21st. This beautiful inferno is known as Wildfire.
Knock me to the pit of you, push me up against your thoughts, watch me ride, kiss me where you say you don't, lock me in all alone. You'll try and you'll try to be what I need. Love, breathe me now, cast me into that wishing way. Me for what I do, still I rise, pull back my head, tighten these scars, ooh, still I fly, I tried and I tried to be what you need, oh, read me not, cause each time that I struggle, it only cooked us up, sullied me.
Yeah. 縛り出す涙で今僕を洗い流してさよならの代わりに伏せた国の瞳が最後の言葉を探していたうつむく君の横顔に情けないくらいかじかんだ手をそっと押し当てて伝えきれないことの葉が遠い日を咲いた吹き抜ける風に書き消されてく不意に見せその笑顔に身動きできないままやけに強く抱いたまま別れを近くに感じていたから胸を刺す痛みと縛り出す涙で今僕を洗い流してさよならの代わりに伏せた君の瞳が最後の言葉を探していたどんなに声を交わしたってどんなに腕を伸ばしてみたってもう届かなくてみんなもただ喜ぶのみたいに二つに割れた命の破片が起きえ起きえと何もかもを欲しがってた過ぎ去った日の抑えもあの日交わした約束どれひとつまた果たせずに君との重なり合うたびに離れてゆくほどにしぼんでいく僕の心は開き切ったままの傷口をさらしてしたたら赤い血を拭えずにいた震える頼りないことが寄せては返す波のようで胸を刺す痛みも絞り出す涙もまた君を思い出すけどさよならの代わりに口づけを残して失うばかりの僕の瞳は違う答えを探していた
From their 2010 album Abingdon Road, that was Abingdon Boys School with Shiosai. Although the band's been on hiatus for a few years, frontman TM Revolution has been keeping busy with a few single releases, as well as a contribution to a new tribute album for the late ex-Japan guitarist Hide. It's been reported that Microsoft will be showcasing new hardware and accessories at this year's Gamescom. These new aspects of Xbox will make their grand debut during their Inside Xbox show live from the convention floor on August 21st, leading many people to speculate on what could be in store for Microsoft's gaming brand. Now, I've been vocal about Xbox's lack of, let's say, sparkle they've delivered this console generation, losing out to the likes of the PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch when it comes to quality exclusives. Now, I'll even go so far as to say that the Wii U had better exclusives than the Xbox One currently has, Devil's Third included in that pack. But their E3 presentation this year was actually pretty good, giving way to many surprises and leaving me hopeful of what's to come. So, what could be in store from Xbox here? We've already seen them craft a very well-received controller for disabled gamers, as well as extend an invite to their competition to help make controllers for their consoles, so that way everyone can play their favorite titles regardless of physical limits. There's also codenamed Scarlet, but since that's not supposed to be unleashed to the public until late 2020, that might be too early to showcase during this year's Gamescom. What we could get is a hint of what is to come from Scarlet, though, and I feel like this would be the best way to bring back something like the HoloLens into the picture. It's a pretty kick-ass piece of technology, but you know, due to its cost being so damn high, it really wasn't that average player-friendly. But now that it's been a few years since they've unveiled it, perhaps its costs are down to an, let's say, an admirable price. What I think Microsoft needs to dive into is the virtual reality market. A team-up with Oculus, which sometimes comes packaged with an Xbox controller, would probably be the smartest thing that they could do to combat against the PlayStation VR, which has a respectable amount of good titles out for it. And with the cost for virtual reality peripheral dropping too, it may be time for Microsoft to grab hold of that market and give it a go. I mean, imagine playing Gears of War or Halo or even Crackdown on virtual consoles. It would be really badass. But here's the thing, and this is what's really making me hesitant. Microsoft has this habit of announcing cool new gadgets that never see the light of day. I think back to that hologram setup that they wanted to do alongside the Kinect that lit up one's entire wall and plastered the game's world all throughout it. It was a great looking setup, but it never made it past a demo or two at gaming conventions. So these new gadgets may be presented at this unveiling, but who knows if they'll even enter the hands of us regular gamers. Microsoft will have to truly showcase the potential of these new products, as well as why us gamers should be clamoring for them. Otherwise, well, let me be honest, when's the last time you actually used your Kinect? Me personally, it's been almost 3 years. So Microsoft, whatever you plan to unveil, please be sure to make sure it's worth our time. We want to be wowed by your presentation, not blahed by it. Show us why this new tech is both cool and worth putting money down for. After all, you've got some catching up to do with Nintendo and Sony, and something like this could help with being on their current level of success. Especially when it comes to your sales in Japan. I was actually talking about this with my roommate, Raph, and I mentioned how Xbox barely sells 100 consoles a week over there in Japan. I know Japan is one country, but they are kind of like the masterminds when it comes to gaming. So the fail over there is to basically fail in the face of the gaming industry. My personal opinion, but numbers don't lie. Anyways, let's go back to this week's playlist. The funk is back, as Broadio have returned with a brand new album entitled Yes, which is what you will say when you hear this record. Here now from the new LP is Shout to the Top. Only you know best. Only you know best. Best. 過激じゃないと誰も気づかない。麻痺してるんだよ結構。いつの時代だろうとシンプルに僕ら感動できるぜきっと。未来のアトム、あとは。
強さになった。信じる者はいつか救われるって、救われたためしかないぜ。 Only you know best、 Only you know best、 Best。 Have a nice day、 未来のアトム、あとは任せたよ、よろしくね。それまで僕ら何残す、愛し合って革命を起こせ。シャウトだと君の声がぐっと近づく、シャウトだともっともっと君を聞かせて。憧れ何の取り柄もないまま黄昏、大して疲れたわけじゃないのに、心がそう決めてあるから続かね。正しいね、正しいね、だけどね、いくつになっても変えられないもの貫いていく。地球最後の日だって言われても迷わず放って。 Have a nice day、 未来のアトム、あとは任せたよ、ろしくね。それまで僕ら何残す、愛し合って革命を起こせ。シャウトだと君の声がぐっと近づく、シャウトだともっともっと君を聞かせて。
Just turn around and close the door on a world that's asking honey. questions. Are you afraid of the darkness? Are you afraid of the darkness? I'm afraid of the darkness too. We're all caught in a blackout, trying to feel our way out. Wait for the morning, I'll be waiting for you. Meet me in the middle, meet me in the middle. Bring a burning candle with you.
That was, of course, the multi-talented Frank Turner with Blackout from this year's fantastic record, Be More Kind. Be sure to check out the interview I recorded with Frank during his six-day residency at the Royale in Boston. It was truly an honor to chat with one of our generation's greatest singers and songwriters. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can follow us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're in a band and want to be featured on our show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter and the video games, J-pop, and anime amino pages at kingbaby.com. ESH, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc. That's omnistryinc. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and on facebook.com/landofash. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Ash, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, and Smashed Rook. Promotional consideration for this week's tracks from Dentist and Alinda M, made by Shameless Promotion PR, and a very special thank you to Lost Chocolate Lab for their contribution to last week's Shameless Tuesdays. This Thursday, check out a new episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, where it's all about the new shows of the summer that wowed us or bored us. Tune in just a couple days to find out which series you should absolutely keep your eyes peeled for. And also, hopefully on Thursday, be sure to check out a special episode of One-on-One with Emmy Cousineau of Satellite Young. It hasn't been recorded as of this podcast recording, so I hope it really turns out well. I'm very excited that this opportunity has been given to me. I'm a big fan of Satellite Young. As you know, their self-titled debut album was one of our favorite records last year. Our final track for today comes from Chet Manchi, who just released their seventh and final album of their career entitled Tanjo. They only have a couple more performances left this month, and then the band will sadly call it quits. So here now, for probably the last time with new material, is Chet Manchi with Hadashi no Machi no Star. Until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Chilash to high. Danger. Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.